Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
You know our trusted partner, TireRack.com, for their fast, free shipping, free road hazard protection, convenient installation options, and their great selection of best tires, like the highly consumer-rated Pirelli Scorpion Weather Active. But did you know they sell other automotive products? Wheels, brakes, suspension, just to name a few. Go to TireRack.com/Colin. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
The Volume.
Just a reminder, you can catch me recording this podcast live on AMP. AMP is a new live radio app that lets you call in and chat with me in person while recording. Get the app on Apple's App Store and make sure you follow me at John Middlecoff to get notified when I go live. What is going on, my people? How are we doing on this beautiful Wednesday? I'm recording this on Tuesday, and we have several podcasts out so far this week. If you missed yesterday's podcast, we reacted to the Monday Night Football games, as well as some other nuggets from Sunday. Today, we will piggyback on that, talk a little Cowboys, talk a little Rodgers, just talk the overall, you know, status, some teams, some buzz, some just football talk, get down and dirty in the trenches, and talk a little Deion Sanders, Oregon. It's just a story that just kind of fascinates me. Not as much the story, but just the reaction by so many of these former players who I didn't see really getting mad over the Colorado player videos that were going viral today of them talking about Oregon. I have a couple thoughts on that. And so a lot of football talk. Plan is to have podcasts every day. We're just grinding here. Season's off and running. A lot going on. And excited to talk ball. So that is the plan. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast if you listen on Colin's feed. All the stuff's on YouTube as well. And we got merch on thevolume.com if you want to get a 3 and out hat. We will have the mailbag on this podcast as well. We're just doing it every podcast because I'm getting so many mailbag questions. If I've missed your question, I apologize. You definitely got in there. It's hard for me to keep track of everyone. And Zuckerberg, dude, spending too much time in Tahoe, not as locked in on the ability, like an Excel spreadsheet, I should be able to somehow put it in like a query or something, but you just can't. You know, these are first world problems on Instagram. Before we get into football, I need to tell you about something. Do you want to get out of your house? Do you want to go do something fun? Do you want to go to a Taylor Swift concert whenever she goes touring again? Do you want to go see your favorite comedian? You want to go see Deion Sanders? Well, here's what I need you to do. I need you to grab that little thing called the smartphone. Trust me, we all got them. And I need you to type in your apps, Game Time. They happen to be the official ticketing app of this podcast, 3 and out, Game Time, official ticketing app of this pod. Sign up. Go to their maps. Go search any event you want to go to. They have interactive maps on every event. You can figure out where you're sitting, the price points, and type in the promo code John. That's just my name, J-O-H-N, promo code John. Anything you want to go to. Football games, basketball games, World Series games, concerts, comedy shows. Game Time app. Promo code John. Save $20. Keep hammering that promo code, people. I wanted to start. I talked to briefly with Coward after on Sunday night, and we hit on the Cowboy situation. And clearly, the cool part about the NFL is the stats speak for themselves. Every year you have teams that made the playoffs previously, missed the playoffs, and teams that missed the playoffs make the playoffs. And every year we all pick teams like, this team's going to suck. This team's going to be awful. And then they're actually kind of competitive. And we think, oh, this team might be a fringe playoff team. And then they draft fourth overall. There's a ton of parity in this league, right? Every team has the same amount of money and same amount of draft picks. You just get to choose how you allocate it. And typically what changes for a lot of teams is who's your head coach and who's your quarterback. But even then, sometimes people get injured, things change. All of a sudden, we all thought Arizona was going to suck. Caleb Williams is going to refuse to go there. And now, listen, I don't think they're headed toward 9 wins, but they're clearly pretty damn competitive. It's like, oh, maybe the Broncos will be decent this year. No, they blow. So you find out things even earlier in the season where you're like, wrong on that one, right on that one, and you know relatively quick. And one thing with the Dallas Cowboys, the NFL's hard. There are a lot of cliches that come out of locker rooms, cliches that come out of post games, cliches that you hear at the beginning of the week when you're watching your favorite team's coach's press conference. Some of it is true. Like, it's very difficult to win in the league. As a fan, I would have been like, give me a break. This team's 1-11. You know, you have 8 wins. You should win this game. But I've seen it, and I'll never forget going into David Culley's office. He was the wide receiver coach when I was with the Eagles. He ended up, obviously, famously getting the Texans job, 1-done. Nice guy, though. You know, good position coach. Probably not a head coach, clearly. But I made a comment, like, my first year in the NFL. I'm like, God, these guys suck. He's like, what'd you say? He's like, don't ever say that, man. He's like, they have big houses and drive nice cars, too. And it's true. This is not college football, where Oregon has dramatically a much better roster than Colorado. Even in the NFL, where teams have better rosters, all those guys are getting paid. And some of them are getting paid a lot of money. It's difficult to win. So to me, Dallas, like, I maybe overvalued them a little bit, thinking they'd win. They had like 15 win upside. They're still a 12, 13 win team. I feel strongly about that. But one thing came to light the other day is Mike McCarthy. And I saw them play live in Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers' young career several times. And it was a sight to be seen. You had Clay Matthews with the hair flying around, and you had Aaron just slinging it to guys like Driver Jones and Jordy Nelson in the peak of his young powers. And he was really, really special. And you can look up his red zone numbers. They're some of the best in NFL history. Now, most great quarterbacks are good in the red zone. Just like most solid quarterbacks, like a Dak Prescott, is going to throw most of his touchdowns in the red zone. But what made Aaron Rodgers really special for a long period of time, and he was even good when he was winning the MVPs a couple years ago, was he could really ad-lib. It's really one of his greatest strengths. When you think about the greatest quarterbacks of all time, at least in my life, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, like, they weren't ad-lib guys. They couldn't really move. They could ad-lib at the line of scrimmage. They could ad-lib a hot read to their wide receiver with a look or a hand movement, but they couldn't move. They couldn't just all of a sudden juke a defender, scramble around, and make some laser to the back corner of the end zone. That wasn't their deal. Well, Aaron, at least in my lifetime, you could maybe throw Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen now in that mix, but of a guy with a long career, is clearly one of the great ad-libbers and freelancers we've ever seen. When a play breaks down, he can not only keep it alive, he then can make a play that only a handful of guys in NFL history have the capability of making, which is a big reason his red zone performances are historically great. Because in the construct of the offense, he can dominate when the play called and it just works, right? You run a slant, an out, whatever, and it's his go-to read and the guy's open, he's going to hit it like a layup. But when those plays are covered, he then can move and make something happen. And his physical capabilities with his arm strength, his intelligence, and I'm talking about Green Bay Aaron and then the stretch he had, you know, year two and year three with LaFleur, it's just all-time great stuff. Just because you pay a player a lot of money, whether you give a baseball player, an NFL player, $100, $200 million in the NBA, max contract, does not mean they're a max player. It's just the market value. Typically, front office or the coach feels we can't upgrade if we don't pay this guy. A lot of times you're backed into a corner. Maybe you have a higher opinion of the player than other people, whatever. he's just as good as you're going to do. So you pay him whatever the market determines that you owe him. Right. And, you know, in the NFL, you start franchising. It actually is, you know, more, you have more options on your salary cap if you give him a more lucrative long-term deal, because the way you're able to manipulate it on the books. So just because Dak Prescott is making all this money doesn't mean he's that level of player. Dak Prescott has been the same guy now for about 5 years, and there's nothing wrong with it. He's a really, really solid player. Great guy, team captain. If you can't have one of the top 7-8 guys, if you do a good job team building, which the Cowboys do, you're going to win a lot of games with that guy playing. But here's the problem. Is McCarthy kind of, I don't want to say, you know, became a high-end NFL coach when he had peak Aaron Rodgers, right? And now he's got Dak Prescott, who is nowhere near the version that put Mike McCarthy kind of on the map and made him a guy that Jerry Jones would immediately offer out of a year out of the NFL. And now that McCarthy has taken over play calling, you watched him the other day in Arizona. Like, Dak Prescott's not going to pull plays out of his ass consistently like Aaron Rodgers. There's going to be a lot of pressure on McCarthy, the schemer, the chess player, to get him some easy looks. And there isn't really any excuses. Tony Pollard, a very unique, talented, skilled running back, can catch the ball, obviously can run the ball between and outside the tackles. You got CeeDee Lamb, a guy that can basically run every route, right? But it's easy, and they did this a couple times, like, let's just run the fade. And listen, I'm not anti the fade, but I like scheming a guy to get an easier look than that. And Brandon Cooks, who's a smaller player, but with his speed, you can utilize it, you know, to get him in some open space. I.e., the Cardinals, when they ran Hollywood Brown late in that game for basically the game-clinching touchdown, just ran him across the field, and he eventually got open. Dobbs kept the play alive, ad-libbed a little bit. So I think there's going to be a lot of pressure. Everyone's going to constantly be critical of Dak. It's the nature of playing that position and making a lot of money. He is what he is, right? It's on the coaching staff, really, and the play caller to get him easier looks. Like, he's not going to make Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Aaron Rodgers in his prime plays. He never really has, and especially now, like, his arm's okay. His mobility's solid, but, like, the guy Dak Prescott has been the last couple years is the guy you're getting right now. So there is pressure. Like, he's kind of established where he's at. 9, 10, 11, somewhere like that as an NFL quarterback, which is good. Why the Cowboys probably want to keep the guy. But he's going to be a little dependent on the guy moving the chess pieces around as the play caller. And that, to me, watching that game against Arizona, most good teams in the NFL, the Eagles, the 49ers, and Miami could all go 14-3 or 15-2. One of their losses is going to be stunning. They easily could lose a game at some point in the season, especially late in the season, overlooking opponent to a team where they're a 14-point favorite. Teams in the NFL get upset all the time. I don't want to even make that big a deal over the one game, but specifically in the red zone, it's pretty clear, like, Dak's going to need some help. And to me, there's a lot of pressure right now if I'm Jerry looking at Mike, because who do I got to beat in the conference? Well, I know Kyle can move chess pieces around, right? Even the Eagles, they just have so much talent that me and you could figure out a way to score some touchdowns when we got in the red zone with that offensive line, with that quarterback sneak, with A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Goddard. It's just, it's hard not to. But the Cowboys, listen, this might not be the 93 Cowboys on offense, but they do have a lot of talent, and they should be scoring points, and it's going to be a lot of pressure on them if they're going to want to compete with the Niners and the Eagles to get it done in the red zone. And to me, that doesn't start with Dak, because we've established what he is. It starts with a head coach. Speaking of Aaron Rodgers, I watched some clips of him today with Pat McAfee, where he goes on every week. He continues to go on as he's in Southern California, listening to dolphins have sex, trying to heal his Achilles. And seemed like he was in pretty good spirits, which it has to suck watching your team get dominated by Belichick while you're sitting at home. And it's a shitty situation. Like I said yesterday on my Zach Wilson thoughts, no one signs up for this. Like this is something you can't control. You can control who the backup is, but you can't control a guy tearing his Achilles, especially someone who your entire season depended on. But we're here. And Aaron clearly watched the game. And kind of, I would say, took some shots. I didn't know if he was going to take shots at, like, the coaching staff or even specifically Zach, but he kind of just took shots at the entire offense.
He's like, we kind of got to be a little more mature than we were. Because one clip that went viral on Sunday was the backup running back screaming at the running back coach. And there was another visual, don't totally blame him, Garrett Wilson kind of being frustrated with Zach Wilson. And clearly anytime, and this happened last year with the Jets, your offense is just incapable of operating. Like, it's beyond anemic. It doesn't move. It's just, it's unwatchable. Like, the Bears and the Jets, this version of their offenses are unwatchable. People get mad, especially skill guys. For the most part, you know, you see blowups every once in a while with linemen. A lot of their blowups, typically, at least in my experience, happen behind closed doors. It can get really ugly in the office, in the meeting rooms, in the locker room, but they tend to do it. Now, we've seen it. Remember the two Washington guys, the two D linemen fought. I was like, I wouldn't want to be in the middle of those guys. I think we have a long history of skill guys kind of losing their cool, right? It's just, it kind of is what it is. And those guys aren't happy because they know nothing's going to change and nothing's going to change fast. But on Thursday, after the Giants got their butts kicked by the 49ers, by the end or middle of the next day, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan had been extended. And a big reason they had been extended is because in the NFL, like, they had just traded Trey Lance, what, 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks, less than 30 days ago? A guy that is easily the worst draft pick. I'm not the player, his career's not over. I'm just talking about the compensation, what it took to get him. The guy didn't even last till week 1, season 3. It doesn't get any worse than that. Even Jamarcus Russell and Zach Wilson, they've lasted year 3 on their team. Trey Lance did not. Doesn't get any worse. But guess what? You're not paid to draft in the NFL. You're paid to win. And the 49ers are 15-1 in their last 16 games. That includes the playoffs, the loss to the Eagles. The last 2 years are 26-11 with 4 playoff victories. They're currently obviously 3-0 right now. Looks like they're headed toward 14-15 wins. But their operation is just very stable. And like the Jets, like, shit goes wrong all the time. Last year they had Trey Lance breaks his ankle in the second game. Later in the season when they're rolling, Jimmy Garoppolo breaks his foot. Constant adversity. Yet players even in the offseason ask for trades. Deebo Samuel. And it never gets that weird. So basically, Jed York clearly is extending them and the 49ers ownership his parents because they win. That's first and foremost. That is what you were paid to do. Not to draft, not to land guys in free agency, not to develop coaches. Win fucking games on Sunday, Monday, and Thursday. That's all that matters in the NFL. It band-aids everything. Sean Payton, that Russell Wilson could be worse than last year. If they were 2-1, they'd be singing his praises. But he's 0-3, and they're giving up 70 points. It feels like a disaster. And I think sometimes, as coaching staffs, and it obviously, once you're there longer, you have a much better rapport with your guys. But for example now, Robert Saleh's been there long enough with these guys. Most of the guys, especially the young players, he drafted them all or is part of drafting them. And he's in charge of hiring the offensive coordinator. And shit's going to go wrong. It's the NFL. Hell, McCarthy has been part of seasons where I remember when Rodgers broke his collarbone. I think it happened on Monday night. And remember that season, they ended up figuring out a way to get to the playoffs as a wild card. So part of being a good coach is handling some rough waters. Things are not always going to go smoothly. Things are going to be difficult. Injuries are going to happen. And I think sometimes in the NFL, like, it's one thing to win. Like I said, most important thing. It's also another thing to win and just be pretty normal and pretty stable. The Chiefs are a good example this year. Their first game, Travis Kelce, at one moment, they probably thought he had torn his ACL. His knee was all messed up. He was standing on the sideline. They got their star defensive player up in the stands. It's like, God, this isn't easy. And they lose the game at home to the Detroit Lions, to the Detroit freaking Lions, who are honestly pretty good. I think I feel pretty good about them winning that division. Even with the Packers, you know, being feisty, and they're going to have a lot of guys returning for injury. But listen, like, it's tough. It's never easy. Even the Detroit Lions, they draft Jameson Williams, comes back off the ACL, and then he starts making parlays and can't stay out of trouble, gets suspended for 6 games. And you see some of these teams, like the Jets, like Aaron Rodgers tears Achilles. That sucks. A lot of players have gotten hurt in the history of the league. Happens all the time. Does your team just unravel? Do your players start fighting other coaches? Because that's a reflection of your coach. And that's when shit starts hitting the fan and things get weird. That's when owners get antsy. Like the Bears. Listen, Justin Fields sucks. That's not your fault. You didn't draft him. But your defensive coordinator's forced to resign. You haven't won a game in almost a calendar year. Like, players are starting to get antsy. Things get weird. And you just have to wonder, like, listen, I was told this this offseason about Jonathan Gannon. And listen, a lot of people listening, if you're a Cardinal fan, I don't know if we have that many Cardinal fans listening. But no, I was pretty critical. Just thought it was kind of crazy that the guy got hired. You know, he bought a $10 million house. Now, listen, I'm pro getting a $10 million house, but first time head coach is like just crazy world we live in. And I had guys with the Eagles tell me, listen, John, he might not be Belichick or Vic Fangio when it comes to just dominance of defensive scheme, but he's an impressive guy and he is a fantastic just kind of leader. And some of those videos this year went viral, right? Of him doing the pew, pew, pews to Rondale Moore, of him having the video inside with the players about fire in their gut, and everyone was shitting on him. Well, that's what Twitter does. Everyone just is negative. It's just an area where the angry congregate and the media lives most of their days. But Jonathan Gannon, you give him credit, like clearly his team feels very motivated, is trying really hard. And he doesn't have that many guys that feel like would be huge core pieces of contending teams. But you watch the Jets, it's like, you guys are kind of unraveling off one injury. So you really were just, obviously your success this year of going deep in the playoffs was going to be because of Aaron Rodgers. But I just remove him. You're just a 5-6 win team because that's where it kind of feels like you're headed. Now, I'm pretty sure you're playing the Chiefs this week at home, Sunday night football. I'm sure you know who's going to be in the house. A lot of eyeballs on that bad boy. You put Taylor Swift in a suite at an NFL game. See those numbers? Like 10 extra million people watch. So this could get ugly. This could get ugly really fast. And owners, to me, get very, very uneasy. It's one thing if I like you and I'm rooting for you. And I think clearly they like Saleh. They like Joe Douglas. But like, so shit hits the fan. Like, it's no guarantee if we draft Caleb Williams, he won't get hurt. Well, so your backup comes in. We're just automatically going to suck. And that's what I wonder. And you're seeing it with the Bears. You're seeing it with the Jets. Obviously, Sean Payton's getting a little time because he's just only coached three games, but it can't go much worse, much, you know, more quickly than it has, right? 70-20. I still can't get over that. I really can't. 70 points. And they had 70 points, like 7 minutes remaining in the game. That's insane. I've said over and over. I said it yesterday. I'm going to say it all week. I'd rather lose like 50-0. They lost by 50 points. I'd rather lose 50-0. If you give up 70 points, that's basically three more touchdowns from 50-0. That is so many touchdowns. How's that even possible? How is that possible? How did anyone ever show up to the meeting the next day? How could you walk into the office? I used to be petrified in college and the pros after a loss. How angry everyone was, how tense everyone was. These are like game-winning field goal losses or a late interception loss. These are close games. Can't even imagine walking in. I was at the Fresno State game a couple weeks back, and I was hanging out with a guy that played in the NFL for 6-7 years. He was kind of like a journeyman tight end, and he played all over the place. And he said that he played for the Patriots for a couple years in their heyday with like Randy Moss. They never lost. And he said it was every meeting was so intense because the coaching staff didn't miss. They never missed a missed assignment. So if you fucked up, look, not even talking like a drop or a missed block, like a misstep. Running, just angling your body the wrong way for half a yard that might screw up the coverage to cheat. He said, you got undressed. The standard there, he's like, was stupid high. Everywhere else I would go, I was terrified to go into these meetings because I expected to get that. Yet most places this guy went, and he went to some successful places, he's like, it wasn't nearly like that. Not that he didn't get yelled at when you had a missed assignment, but the standard was nowhere near what it was. What is Sean Payton doing? And I followed the stories of, you know, some of the local media, especially some former Denver Broncos, are kind of being critical because he's being short with the reporters. And he's a classic, like, good to the local reporters, bad to the local reporters, good to the national reporters. I don't really care about any of that because ultimately none of that means anything if you're losing 70-20. Like, no one, Adam Schefter, Colin, no one could justify giving up 70 points in 2023 in the National Football League. It's no one can defend that. Not even your biggest you know, fanboy. It's impossible. And the Jets are at the point, like, how do you defend keep running out Zach Wilson? Right? The Bears, what else are they supposed to do? I would run Fields into the ground. So no one has any excuse. But the Trevor Siemian, like, much is going to change there. And I don't know, man. Crazy league. One more thing I wanted to hit on. Because this story, some of the discourse on this has just been kind of laughable. I talked about it briefly yesterday. And then this morning when I woke up, about 50 people had forwarded me. And it was on my Twitter account and Instagram account as well. The video that the Oregon Ducks put out about basically the entire week of the Colorado week. And the thing I wanted to focus on was the pregame. I have no problem, and I've said this over and over, the NFL and college football don't really parallel each other beside the football game on Saturday or Sunday. And even there are some different rules in the games, and the hash marks are different. But the money all comes from the games. But Monday, and for college, Sunday through Friday is completely different. In college football, there are elements that an NFL coach never has to deal with. In the NFL, Monday and Tuesday are 100% just game planning. That's all you do. You just play chess against the other team on film. You try to figure out your game plan. And then you completely, you know, implement at practice what's going to work, what's not going to work, and you continue to change, adapt, add, or subtract throughout the week. Now, while you do that in college, you game plan, practice, add, subtract throughout the week, you also spend a lot of time talking to recruits on the phone, texting, interacting. You also, with your players, have to do some stuff academically, and you can only spend so much time with them. So your days are much different. Recruiting is an area in the NFL that's irrelevant. Andy Reid this week is not recruiting anybody. Pete Carroll, Kyle Shanahan, Belichick, their only focus is first, second, third down offensive defense and special teams against their opponent. That's the only thing that matters. Where Deion is hosting, I saw the 2025 number one recruit. You're constantly marketing. And Deion's one of the great marketers of all time. Nick Saban, underrated marketer. Pete Carroll was a great marketer. Honestly, I'm not a great marketer. It's one thing in this profession I think I could be better at. I'm a good salesman. I can talk. I can sell the shit out of anybody. But marketing's not really my strong point. Deion can fucking market. He's been great at it since I was a little kid. He's elite at it. I mean, it doesn't get any better. And he's clearly a pretty good salesman too once he gets in the room. But any of this stuff that the coaches said, it didn't trigger me. I thought the reaction was moronic. Dan Lanning, Deion Sanders, you can say whatever you want. But some of the clips of the Colorado players talking shit to Oregon on the field, it was like, yeah, I think this is a little much. You guys are acting like you're Deion Sanders or like this is the you in 1998 or you play for Urban Meyer and the Florida team in 07. Like, come on, guys, let's pump the brakes. Talking about we're going to kick your ass, staring them down. I don't know about that. That's where I think sometimes Deion, who his bravado, his confidence is earned. He's earned it for 30 years. All he's ever done is be successful, dominate in or on and off the field in football, in the marketing sphere of selling himself, in ads, of just being the ultimate cash cow. But beside like Travis Hunter and Shador, I think most guys on Colorado should just kind of ease in when they're playing opponents like Oregon, like USC. And to do like that, I was thinking about this morning. If the Oregon players had been on video saying, I'm going to beat the shit out of you, just talking a bunch of shit, and then got mollywopped, I can't even imagine the outcry of all the former players. And the other thing that's bothered me about the former players, who are all pro Deion, which I am too, right? I just think that like his team now, we got to pump the brakes. Like we got to come back to earth, not in terms of recruiting, but like you don't get to act like you're the equals of Oregon because clearly you're not. You have to prove that. Like once we get to the field, you have to prove your worth. Deion's proving his worth as a marketer, as a coach, right? I think sometimes these guys and these players all on TV who played at a high level, who played at all these colleges, if other players on a team that was not their equal was talking shit about all the guys on TV, they would all want to fucking fight them right there. It would be a brawl. So one thing Colorado is going to have to be careful in this group is it feels like they've taken on Dion's bravado, but they're not playing Nebraska anymore. They're playing some of these squads that are the real deal. They got NFL dudes ever. Like Oregon, if I played for Oregon and I was walking out and I saw all these Colorado guys talking all this shit when we're at home, clearly, how many guys on Colorado do you think Oregon would not just want, but would have offered coming out of high school beside Travis Hunter? I bet it's a pretty, pretty small list. Well, guess what? The players at Oregon know that. So they don't view Colorado as the same, just like USC this weekend, will not view them as equals. So this notion that, like, I feel like Colorado, because of Dion, is almost being held to this other standard, like the players. I didn't see any criticism beside from former NFL Oregon players. All these other NFL players are always critical of all this stuff. Like, you got to earn it. Can't just run your mouth. And then Colorado does it, not a peep. I don't get it. I really don't. It's kind of baffling to me, though not surprising, because no one wants to really piss off Dion. But I would imagine Dion tells these guys, let's rein it back in a little bit. Not like me in the social media videos, but on the field. Like, I wouldn't be calling, fucking saying something to Caleb Williams pregame, right? It's probably not a good idea, because you're not, they're equals, even though you've had some success. Now, it is amazing, and this is the power of Dion, and this is why his confidence is so high. They had more people watching that game, Colorado-Oregon, a blowout, than Notre Dame and Ohio State. And you could argue the two biggest brands in college football, definitely two of the top four, are Ohio State and Notre Dame. Two brands rate. NBC has literally signed an exclusive deal to have Notre Dame games because they rate. Ohio State printed cash for Fox forever on Big Noon Kickoff just because they get 7-8 million people. In Colorado, and this just shows how polarizing Dion is, right? Because of everything he's saying, he just causes everyone to have an opinion, right? In my business, I don't care if you hate me or love me, just listen, right? Just have an opinion. Once you get apathetic and don't care, I'd be in trouble, right? Dion knows as a recruiter, like, you got to move the needle. He doesn't care if, like, the media or former players are pissed off, but it does matter when his players are crossing the line. And I thought it wasn't a good idea, and clearly it was not, because Oregon made him pay.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. They help you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else. Did you know 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites? LinkedIn's the only one I use. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/john. That's linkedin.com/john to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Okay, let's dive into a little thing we like to call the mailbag. At John Middlecoff is the Instagram. Fire in those DMs. Here is Jay. Question.
When scouts are looking at a talent, do you give all players full credit for plays they may not technically have netted any stats, i.e. a quarterback throws a dime, but the receiver drops it. DB gets a pick, but a DT was lined up offsides, etc. 1,000%. There are going to be some very, very talented players drafted in the first several rounds, and honestly throughout the draft, whose stats don't look great, right? Some of it's predicated on the offense. If you're a wide receiver, do you not play with a great quarterback? If you are, a corner, are they not playing you correctly, but you would have the skills in our defense? To me, the key is to make a good scout is to know exactly what your NFL team is looking for. And it's why once you have these franchises that have consistency, Pete Carroll, obviously Andy Reid, now the 49ers and McVay, you know what those guys like. So when you're out on the road evaluating these guys, you're not just looking at the stat sheet when you're walking in. Now, sometimes the stat sheet, let's say you're low on a guy or haven't really been paying much attention, and it's one thing. If you're putting up numbers at a Texas, USC, Oregon, whatever, right? It's impossible to miss you. But if you're at a random school, a McNeese State, a Weber State, a non-Division I Power 5 program, and you start putting up big-time numbers, sometimes that draws a scout to you. And then you could see it, and you go, I don't really see it. I remember, you're going to find guys sometimes that have 8-9 sacks on the season. Well, if 5 of them are unblocked, what does that actually mean? So it goes both ways. You have to scout with context, right? It's why a lot of these quarterbacks in this modern-day college football throwing a lot of touchdowns. But are they throws that are going to translate to Sunday? Because let's just pick a number. Let's say you throw 38 touchdowns. Let's say like 14 of them, the guy is borderline wide open or a screen pass that a guy takes the whole way. Does that really do much for you? The whole key with scouting a college player is putting him in context. Is this going to translate? Do the skills he has translate? That's why you see guys that don't have a lot of production get drafted high, because you view their skills as translating. And sometimes they don't, right? Because sometimes he only had 4 sacks his senior year, but he's 6'5", he's got long arms, he can bend. You're like, this is going to work. And I'm like, well, maybe there's a reason he doesn't have sacks. He's not the most instinctive rusher. So it's why it's so hard. It's why it's difficult. What's up with McDaniels? This dude is a straight clown. Down 8 with 2.5 minutes left in the game, and he opts to kick a field goal. Fireable offense. Jimmy Garoppolo stinks, and McDaniels handpicks this dude, and let's talk about his recent draft picks. We needed immediate impact with our draft pick, and he takes Tyree Wilson, who is a project DN, who is slow off the snap, and then only has one move, and it's the bull rush, and he's ineffective and allergic to pressure. And second-round pick, Michael Mayer, who can't get on the field, and when he does, he's a damn liability. Mark needs to clean house. Yeah, man, it's not pretty. I don't know if I'm a sucker for Josh or I bought into the hype or I don't know, man, but I just, something's off. And I just don't understand why coaches are so unwilling to coach a guy they don't know, right? Like one of the reasons the Raiders gravitated toward Jimmy Garoppolo, because they were around him in New England. Jimmy Garoppolo's not good anymore. Newsflash, not that good anymore. Chandler Jones, well, we had experience with him in New England. How's that going? Not good, clearly. So does he get that much credit for Devontae Adams? Devontae Adams, like, the only place I want to go is the Raiders. Does he get credit for Max Crosby? He inherited him. Newsflash, Crosby's been good for several years. So Josh McDaniels is a disaster right now. Disaster. Love the pod. I appreciate your grind. Niner fan myself. Wanted to know your thoughts on Purdy from a 3-week sample size. I think he's been solid. I wouldn't call him some huge star, and I wouldn't call him some just full product of Shanahan. I would say he's been very good for stretches. He's looked a little rusty at times. Overall, the team is so freaking good, they've gotten away with it. I thought Thursday he was clearly rusty early. Every time you're like, God, what is off? He'll put together a drive where you're like, okay, feel pretty good. I love the way he carries himself. Like he's a confident player. He clearly benefits from having an excellent play caller and playing with really good skill guys. but he doesn't turn the ball over. Now, there's a luck involved, right? Some picks have been dropped, but I'm bullish on where he's headed. Now, is he good enough to win the Super Bowl? As I said after the Thursday night game, that's the big question mark. That's really the question mark. Can he play really good in the playoffs against really good teams? The Chiefs, who else? The Dolphins. Though when the 49ers played Tua last year, they made him look pretty terrible. Chiefs destroyed the Niners. The Eagles, like that's going to be the test. The Cowboys defense, they're going to beat so many teams just based on talent alone. It's going to come down to four or five games. Question for the pod. What would be your dream broadcast team? Heard you talking about Bad Michaels and Herb Street. And I got to tell you, I don't think Joe Buck is that good either. A lot of times he doesn't sound interested, and he also takes these 15-second pauses in the middle of the game. You think anyone would give Gruden another shot? Say what you want about the man, but he was excellent on Monday Night Football with Tirico. Well, he's currently suing the league. I agree with you. He's just kind of a wild card. It was really more entertainment. I would call him like the poor man's John Madden than he was giving you incredible insight, but he was a good entertainer on TV. He was natural at it. I would say it's going to be difficult because you can't really justify it for ratings, though he would give an initial ratings boost. As a partner of the league, you want to be in good standing. He clearly hates with all of his guts Roger Goodell and the NFL league office, and he's suing them. So I would say right now, Gruden, no go. I think Joe Buck's better than you do. And again, I think Al's one of the greatest of all time. You could argue he is the greatest of all time. I just think at 78 years old, you know, Peyton Manning had to retire when his arm didn't work. Roethlisberger couldn't throw it 15 yards down the field, had to retire. In football or in basketball, Marv Albert, all-time great. He couldn't figure out who was on the court. There's 10 guys in basketball. It was like, God, this is hard to watch. I think Troy Aikman's really good. I think Tirico's probably right now the best. And clearly, like, his high end is not Al in his prime, Marv in his prime. What's his name? Kevin Harlan's really good. But most tandems aren't great. I think Greg Olson's excellent. I don't know if I've actually met him in person, but we've definitely exchanged texts. I think he's come on this podcast before. I really like Kevin Burkhart. I think that is an excellent duo. Olsen's really, really good. I like Nance. You know, he can be a little cheesy, but I know people that have met him and say he's like awesome. So it's not like he's some elitist in terms of the way he treats people. But him and Romo, yeah, I wouldn't call them my favorite. Romo has his moments and other moments where he kind of annoys me. But that's the nature of that job. He's going to, all these announcers, unless you're John Madden, are just going to ultimately piss some people off. Now, there are some terrible crews. Here's what I'll say, though. Broadcasting football is difficult. It's not easy to have everyone watching go, God, love these guys. Because think about this. They're not local, so they're a national traveling group. They don't do most of your games. If you are the fan of Dallas Cowboys, bad example, but let's just pick a random team. The Chicago Bears or the Minnesota Vikings or the Atlanta Falcons. You're going to know your team better than that guy. And for the most part, once your team kind of gets derailed and has a bad season, you're going to get the lower level crew. And you're going to feel like, this guy doesn't even know what he's talking about. You know, when Joe Buck and Al, these guys see the top team so often, they're the national story. If those guys just watch sports television or listen to sports radio, you know what's going on. So I'm critical of Al just because I think it's time to go. Not because I don't think... I mean, he's Al Michaels. And I think they forced Herbie on him because McVay and John Lynch didn't want to leave the NFL. That's what they wanted to do. They wanted to put Sean McVay first. And then when he said no, they wanted John Lynch. And they both said no. They ended up with Herb Street, who, like Jim Nance, I've heard great things about. Awesome dude. I would love to be friends with Herb Street. Don't really want him calling my NFL games. He's in a tough spot. It's very, very difficult for him to impress me and you sitting where we sit. And I just feel like their chemistry, they just don't have much. It's, you know, Herb Street's one of the most famous college announcers or analysts of all time, right? He's been doing the biggest games now for a long time. But it does feel like Al views himself like he's like the Michael Jordan of broadcasters. So even if he sits next to Herb Street, he doesn't view him as an equal. say what you want about Joe and Troy, they just feel on level playing field. And that, to me, Burkhart and Olsen, they just feel like there's chemistry. Now, you don't need chemistry like it's a podcast, but you need some. And I just don't think they have any. You should talk about your expectations for the Lions a little. Curious your thoughts. I think they're a 10-11 win team. Same. I mean, I think they're really good. Their offense, once Jameson comes back, listen, it's one of the rare win-win trades. Like, clearly they had just moved on from Swift. And you can have a good player who, for whatever reason, doesn't fit your culture, doesn't fit your scheme, you just don't like him, right? Not personally, but just, he just doesn't fit. And that was Swift, and that's why they traded him to the Eagles. He's clearly pretty talented. No one ever disputed his physical attributes. But they wanted to go in a different direction. They get Gibbs. Once they get him with Jameson, St. Brown, their offensive line gets healthy. That offense is top-notch. And their defense is just going to get tougher as the season goes on. I don't see how they don't win the division. Even if the Packers get healthy, I still like them over the Packers. Now, I could see a world where if it's Eagles-Cowboys make the playoffs, Niners make the playoffs, a team from the South makes the playoffs, Seattle makes the playoffs, that's six. And then maybe, you know, the Lions and the Packers both make the playoffs. So maybe the Packers are a playoff team. Big fan of the pod. Huge Eagles fan. Carter is a monster. I believe you were in Philly when they drafted Fletcher Cox. I believe Carter will be better than Cox. I think Cox is at the twilight stage of his career and that Carter eclipses him as a full-time starter next year. 100%. I mean, they were somewhat on the fence about Fletcher Cox coming back. Remember a couple years ago, they thought about trading Fletcher Cox. So I think it's fair to say there's a decent chance this is Fletcher Cox last year as an Eagle. Now, maybe he comes back on a very reduced salary. But yeah, this is why you draft players, to replace other starters. It's the nature of the beast. What are your early thoughts on CJ Stroud? I know it's only been three games, and it's a long season, but he looks natural and very poised. Do you think Carolina will ultimately regret taking Bryce over him? I just don't see how Bryce will be successful in the NFL. Full disclosure, I haven't watched a lot of Texans football. That was a game, it's like, I'm not watching this. And then all of a sudden you look at the score and they're kicking their ass. Now, because this weekend they're a standalone game, I'm going to watch. Or no, they're not playing. It's Atlanta-Jacksonville, excuse me. Clearly, I've seen some of the stats, his records, you know, reading about him. Listen, he clearly has been impressive through three games from a poise standpoint. That offense can be very quarterback-friendly if you are a smart and accurate player. He also has a real coach. DeMeco, newsflash, is going to be a star. I would say he's like the younger version of Vrabel. He's going to be big time. So I'd be lying if I said I thought he was going to be some stud as a rookie, but it's impressive what he's doing. I got to go back and at least watch some highlights of him. I haven't made time, too busy to watch Texans highlights. I do think the concerning thing about the Bryce Young experience is I loved him in college, but he's clearly playing on a superior team. And listen, his toughness was evident a couple years ago when they played Georgia, even in the national championship, when Mechie and Jameson Williams had been injured and he was getting peppered by the team that has 7 million NFL players on defense. You can't really do that in the NFL. He's already injured. He does look really, really tiny. And their team just stinks. Their offensive line isn't that good. They had to get DJ Moore to trade for him. They got Thielen, who's old. I just think it's very, very difficult in the NFL when you have a lot of flaws around you and you need help, right? He's not able to just turn into like Kyler Murray. This is one of the things about him coming out was like, you know, he's tiny and he's not really that fast. You know, Kyler was small, but he weighs 20 pounds more than Bryce and he can run like he's Deion Sanders. So when shit hits the fan and he can't see anything, they can just take off. And pretty evident when he's healthy, not many people can catch him. Bryce is actually much more closer to like a pocket quarterback. So I was bullish on Bryce Young, liked him a lot coming out. The eye test has not been good. Do you think Jimmy G's embarrassing performance in the Steelers game and him possibly having a concussion, do you think the Raiders will move to Aiden O'Connell for week four against the Chargers? Well, why wouldn't they have Aiden O'Connell as the backup? That's what I don't understand. They have Brian Hoyer. So if they loved Aiden O'Connell, wouldn't they just make him the backup? Like, okay, Jimmy goes down. You can't just roll with Aiden O'Connell. If Jimmy goes down, you're not winning with Brian Hoyer. Hell, you're not winning with Jimmy Garoppolo. I never understand when coaches draft a player, right? They draft Aiden O'Connell. He looks really good. He's clearly a smart player. You clearly liked him enough to pick him. And he does enough to not only make the team, but like prove that he probably should be the backup, and you don't make him the backup. I have nothing personal against Josh McDaniels, but God, he's terrible. Everything he does, I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Do you think Nick Sirianni is an undervalued head coach? They lost both coordinators last year and are coming off a loss in the Super Bowl, and they still are 3-0. What are your thoughts? He's got an excellent team. I mean, that squad, we talked about it on Monday night, is loaded at every position group with high-end impact Pro Bowler guys. And not the Pro Bowl player that needs like three guys to drop out, like the guy you call first. So he has a lot going for him. It's been a little rocky, right? He clearly is a good motivator. Players really like him. It's unknown how big of an influence he has offensively. I don't think he does anything with defense and how he picks all the players. So undervalued, I'd say no. I think he's getting his proper respect. He's winning a lot. He's celebrating. People think he's good. Like, I think it's proper, but I'm not going to anoint the guy as some genius just yet. He's not bad. I mean, I'm not acting like he sucks, but undervalued feels like he's not being properly talked about, and I probably wouldn't agree with that. Do you think the Colts are ahead of schedule? I know it's only been 3 weeks, but Shane and Anthony appear to be trending up, and they are currently in first place in the AFC South. I fully expect Jacksonville to catch them. Well, it's hard to be ahead of schedule when your quarterback has had to leave both games and then missed a game. So I'd say that's somewhat concerning, is the way your quarterback's going to have to play, because he's like a Cam Newton level menace with the ball in his hands in the open field. He's enormous. He can run. The passing is a major work in progress. So the only way to ever be on schedule is that's going to have to improve. And the only way it can improve is with him playing. It's hard to play when you're constantly getting KO'd. And I know he's not like getting knocked out. I just mean he's going to take a lot of hits because he's a running quarterback. So I think it's a delicate balance. How do we improve this guy, compete to win? Because our best chance to compete to win when he's in is kind of run him around, but give him 30 pass attempts a game or whatever. I don't know. This is why you pay Shane Steichen to be your head coach, who's clearly pretty innovative offensive mind. So I think it's a major challenge. Head of schedule, I would say no. But definitely it's going well. You feel bullish about the draft pick, your head coach, and then I think you just ask yourself how we take steps in future years. Infuse more talent, get more playmakers around him, get an elite weapon on the outside, figure out this Jonathan Taylor situation. Still got a lot of questions around Anthony Richardson. What's the deal with Trevor Lawrence and the Jags? They were supposed to be building off last year and dominate the AFC South. Instead, they look like crap. I saw a headline today that I guess Doug kind of denied that he yelled at all his coaches at halftime. I thought coming into this season, they were going to be like a top five offense. And their defense, talking to some people around that operation, was like, listen, our defense is not going to be that great, but our offense should be dominant. We should score points on everybody. Calvin Ridley, Kirk, Etienne, Lawrence takes a big step. Every time you look up, they're struggling to score. What the hell's going on? And part of the reason I was so confident on them winning the division was young stud quarterback and proven head coach, who's an offensive guy. And it's just not working. And now there are rumblings about Doug, Press Taylor, who's his guy, but getting mad about the situation in regards to the offensive game plan. A lot going on. I would, big week. They're in Europe, England, for a couple weeks. Play the Atlanta Falcons. Like, you should beat the Atlanta Falcons. You got Trevor Lawrence. They got Desmond Ridder. I had a question regarding my Bears. Obviously, this has been the most disappointing season in Bears history, with Rodgers leaving the North, DJ Moore coming in, and Fields turning out to be a more athletic Mitch Trubisky. It's a rough line. It's apparent that the Bears will be taking a quarterback again in the upcoming draft, and hopefully it's Caleb Williams. A buddy of mine in the NFL texted me, do you remember what he was saying? Do you remember when you used to call this guy Uberflus? I used to call him Uberflus. And then it turns out his name is actually pronounced Eberflus. And then he beat the 49ers week one, and a bunch of Bears fans last year was like, call him by his correct name. So I started calling him Eberflus. Maybe I should call him Uberflus again, because he cannot win a game in the NFL. If you were the Bears, who would you hire as the perfect fit for Caleb Williams in the NFL? Would you let Caleb have a say in the hiring process, even as a rookie? The problem is that let's just say USC is in the playoffs or playing a bowl game like January 1. You're communicating with his agent about who he wants as a head coach. Not implausible. Not even that crazy. I mean, this is business. It's just they are not exactly the most progressive organization. Feels a little far-fetched from the McCaskey family. It has to be an offensive guy. I think you would ask. Now, look at the coaches they've hired. They're not exactly, you know, fishing in the Sean Payton barrel. But I would say Lincoln Riley would be of interest. Now, I don't know if he leaves, but I think you would ask him, would you be interested in, I don't know, following Caleb Williams? I think Jim Harbaugh would have to be of interest. He's played there. He's a tough guy. He's also an offensive guy. He's clearly turned around Michigan and has them rolling. He's won in the NFL. So I would say Lincoln and Jim Harbaugh. It's hard with coordinators. It's like, what offensive coordinator in the NFL? Mike Kafka? Eric Bieniemy? There's just no guarantee. It's like you could just be in the same situation. The hard part with asking Caleb Williams, like, how the fuck does he know any of these NFL people? If he says, I want Lincoln, well, of course. Yeah, we do too. But he's like, I want this coordinator. Well, you know the guy? You ever met him? Looking at the speed on Miami, do you think these new offensive minds are going to change the way scouting departments evaluate talent? Obviously, guys like Ja'Marr Chase and Jefferson are studs. But when you start getting to the later rounds, are track stars more likely to be drafted highly because these offensive minds of McDaniel, Kyle, and McVay can utilize their speed compared to be considered football players? Hope this makes sense, but I think you know what I'm getting at. I think it's always been, whenever you're scouting and you have a guy who can fly, right? Who may not be a first or second round pick, but he's in the mid rounds. You go, this guy's going to run like the 4.3s. Like, he's on the radar of NFL teams. And teams are intrigued by that. But you have to be able to play. Like, the reason Tyreek and Waddle are so fucking good is they are elite football players. I mean, Jalen Waddle played at Alabama. Tyreek Hill went on one of the great stretches for one of the best teams we've seen in recent memories. Like, he's a dominant player. So when you see some of these guys, like Tutu Atwell, really fast guy. Took him a couple years to figure it out. But every team was intrigued by the guy. Thinking about the Packers guy's injured right now, but Watson out of North Dakota State. You know, he's a raw player who's, you know, going to deal with some drops, but his speed is evident, right? How fast he plays. I don't think it's changing anything. I think teams have always valued speed. You know, historically, Al Davis valued it more than anyone else. It felt like at times Belichick was on the opposite end of the spectrum. Andy Reid always really liked it. Tyreek Hill, DeSean Jackson, Jeremy Maclin. Like, think about Terrell Owens. Think about the players he likes. Speed. Offensive coaches like explosive players. Like, part of what makes Waddle and Tyreek is, I hear what you're saying about quote-unquote football players leaning the track guy. I can't have a track guy if he doesn't want to get hit, or if he gets injured, or if he doesn't know how to play with the ball in his hands. So there is an element of being a really good football player because there's like an instinctive nature once you get the rock and knowing how to track the ball. So it's a hard balance. It's why when someone asked me the other day, like, when you go into these different programs, do you evaluate based on, well, Ohio State always struggles with quarterback, we got to stay away from the quarterback. Well, if you had done that, C.J. Stroud, you wouldn't have touched him. And now he's have more passing yards through three games than anyone else, you know, I think, in NFL history. A little skewed, modern-day NFL, but you know what I mean. So, no, I think every player is his own entity. In the history of the league, there's always been a ton of fast guys in the draft. Some can play, some can't. And it's on the evaluator, it's on the scheme, you know, to kind of figure it out. Mailbag question. The Cowboys lost to the Cardinals, more of an indictment of Dallas or more of a statement for Arizona, who we thought was a lock for the number one pick, but looks competitive. I understand being shorthanded without Diggs and three guys on the offensive line, but I feel like we're quick to call Dallas a contender after two wins over bad teams, Giants and the Jets, with no Rodgers, and the offense doesn't look special with Dak's limitations. I talked about it earlier. I think a lot's going to come down because they're going to be able to run the ball. Pollard's a stud. Their run game translates. And their passing game is going to be more than good enough with Cooks and CeeDee Lamb. It's going to come down to red zone. It's going to come down to Mike scheming guys for Dak and having special plays. and having unique play calls, which I would say is not really his specialty, but their defense is really good. And like you said, even without Diggs, their defense is still going to be good. And they're, when you have that good of a defense and, you know, more than capable offense, you should be able to cruise to 10 wins. And if you don't lose games like Arizona, 12 or 13, they were a 12 win team last year. So I would say, yeah. And I was a little guilty of this too. Super Bowl contender. Listen, Dak and McCarthy probably holding them back, but they're going to be one of the better teams in the NFL. Now, I think sometimes I'm guilty of this. It's like, I think, you know, if they can just get hot for 3 or 4 weeks, can you close your eyes and picture Mike McCarthy and Dak just rattling off these three wins? Because this is what, let's just say this hypothetically, what it would take to win the Super Bowl. Eagles, second round, in Philadelphia. Jalen Hurts, that operation. Then go to San Francisco. This could also be opposite, right? I'm not trying to act like the Niners are going to get the number one seed. Could be vice versa. Go to San Francisco, Levi Stadium, beat Kyle Shanahan and that squad. And then in the Super Bowl in Las Vegas, beat an Andy Reid. It feels unlikely, right? It feels unlikely. And I've always said, like, all he's got to do is just go on one Joe Flacco, Eli Manning type run. Looking back on those runs, it's pretty fucking crazy how it happened. It really is. It probably shouldn't have happened, but it did. Knocking out, like, Peyton Manning's and that 49er team and the Patriots. When Eli did it, he's taking out, like, Brett Favre and sweet Cowboys teams. It's very, very unlikely. So it would, for them to win the Super Bowl, they're not good enough at quarterback and head coach. Right? I know Mike's won one, but let's be real. Like, the combination. But could they just have their greatest month stretch? It feels like it would take a miracle. So it does. I'm not acting like just because they lost a game that they suck. They're going to be right in the mix. And they're going to be, depending on how their games look against the Niners and the Eagles, in the playoffs, 3 or 4 point underdog. It's not like they're going to be a 10-point dog. They can win the game. Can they win back-to-back games? They got to play them both? Because that's what they would have had to done last year. Feels unlikely. It feels really hard just for them to get to the Super Bowl. Hell, I think people that don't like the Cowboys, and a lot of people don't, just because they're like the Yankees or Duke basketball, they're just a polarizing team. They go, John, win the Super Bowl? They haven't been to the NFC Championship game in 25 years. You're talking about a team that hasn't been to the NFC Championship game in 25 years. Hell, the Jets and the Bears have been at NFC and AFC Championship games, you know, way more recently, right? The Jets were there in, what, 10 or 11? The Bears were there the year Rodgers won it. Think about that. Have a great day. Adios. See ya.
The Volume.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.